Welcome to Happy Trails, the podcast for trail riders. Episode 19, Nevada Horse Trails and the Pony Express Reride. Hi, I'm your host, Jess. I travel full-time with my horses, and over the years, I've met some really interesting people. I started this podcast to share our stories. My guest today is Samantha Sazorka of Nevada Discovery Ride. Sam has been called Nevada's trail boss. She's ridden thousands of miles across Nevada with her Nevada Discovery Ride project. She's also the state coordinator for the American Discovery Trail, the nation's only coast-to-coast trail for hikers, bicyclists, and equestrians. In this episode, Sam and I will be chatting about the stunning trails in Nevada, how to find places to ride and camp, her long riding experiences and tips to stay safe on the trail, and her exciting adventure partnering with the annual Pony Express Reride reenactment of delivering the mail across the Wild West. Just a quick note, this interview was recorded on video. So if you're listening to the audio podcast, you can switch over to the Ride Climb YouTube channel and find it there. You can meet me and Sam face-to-face and see photos and videos of the awesome places we're talking about. All right, let's saddle up and get going. So the last time we spoke, it was right before you took off on one of your long rides in 2021. And it seems like you tend to do long rides every 3 to 5 years. So do you have another one in the works?
You know, we're not done long riding. I like to wait for the right trail to inspire me, to grab me. So I've been thinking about trails. I've been researching trails. This fall, I'll be doing a ride through Lincoln County, which is a really remote county in southeastern Nevada with a lot of public land to explore. So I'm just going to be doing a really concentrated ride in that county to get to know it. It's not technically going to be a long ride, but it'll be a really focused, long-ish ride while I continue waiting for the right trail to inspire me. But we're not done. Our adventures are not over.
Cool. What's the terrain like in Lincoln County?
It's really interesting. It's high desert. It's right on the border with Utah. So you start getting into that sort of Colorado Plateau, you know, southern Utah type of terrain, with buttes and mesas and some red rock, but you're still getting that sagebrush, pinyon, juniper sort of zone of the high desert, a little bit of that Mojave feel too. So it's a real transitional area with a lot of diversity. I'm very excited to explore it on horseback.
That's really awesome. It sounds super cool. Are you going to be documenting some of those trails that you ride and including them in your directory?
Absolutely. That sort of was the impetus for focusing on that county. It's one of the least known counties in Nevada, I should say, in terms of for tourism and visitors. So I thought it would be really fun to explore it. It also has the most wilderness areas, national monuments. There's just so much public land to explore there. So I will be photographing and filming throughout the journey in Lincoln County.
I love that you're exposing people to really underappreciated areas. I think that Nevada is one of those states that's just flown under the radar for so long. And it's really cool that you're helping to promote horse trails and horse riding in that area. How are you doing this all personally, or is this actually part of a job for you?
It's a little bit of both. It has been a passion project for years with my Nevada Discovery Ride, doing my long rides. And any of the sort of content that I was doing around that has always been a passion project, just because I love sharing Nevada with people and exposing people, as you said, to a sort of lesser known state. People know Las Vegas, they might know Reno, but what's in the middle? No one knows. So it's always been a passion project of mine. This year, I was really fortunate to get to partner with the Bureau of Land Management on a public lands project. So a lot of what I'm doing is documenting public lands, not always on horseback, but often for the Bureau of Land Management, and then also for my Nevada Horse Trails project.
That's great. How many trails do you have listed in the Nevada Horse Trail directory so far?
The directory launched in January, and I think we're up to 60 listings so far. And that is trails, guest ranches, equestrian campgrounds, state parks, sort of anything equestrian friendly. So I'm adding to it as I have time. Again, it's a passion project. So I add to it when I have time and I can get out and explore something new, but I have a lot to plan to add. There's so much to ride in Nevada, so.
How easily accessible do you think Nevada is for visitors from out of state who want to bring their horses?
I think Nevada has a range of accessibility, certainly in the more in the areas around more urban areas like Reno, like Tahoe, Las Vegas. Those trails and campgrounds are much more accessible for, let's say, more inexperienced travelers or riders. And then as you get into Nevada, you start to into the backcountry, which is mostly the rest of the state. Those trails or campgrounds tend to be, it's not that they're not accessible, it's just that you need some advanced planning and knowledge of them. You couldn't just wing it and go. And I think that was really why I wanted to start the website. Last summer, I was camped at a really remote equestrian campground in central Nevada. And it's a campground that a lot of people don't know. It's called Columbine. It's beautiful, stunning access to the Toyabe Crest Trail, this incredible riding in the mountains. But not a lot of people know about that campground, and it is a little tough to get into. And I thought, gosh, it would be awful for someone to want to go to this campground and not know anything about it, and then get stuck with their truck and trailer, not be prepared, and maybe they didn't bring water for their horse, or maybe they don't know what is at the campground. What sort of accommodations? Are there corrals? Are there lines for high lining? What is there? And I thought it would be so great if there was a website where someone could go to get all of that information up front, specifically for equestrians, before they head into the backcountry. So I started taking pictures of the campsite while I was there, and that was the first listing that I made. When I got home, I thought, I'm going to make this website. And I started with that campground.
Oh, that is so helpful. So many people are afraid to venture out because they don't feel confident that they have all of the information or that their truck and trailer is going to fit. Or, a lot of people are scared to go out and camp without a reservation. For you and me, who have a little bit more backcountry and remote experience, we understand that, especially out here in the West. Once you get out of urban and popular areas, there's so much space, there's so much room, there's so much land publicly available for dispersed camping, even in organized campgrounds run through the BLM and Forest Service. They're not crowded with horse people. You can usually find a spot, no problem. And if you can't, you just go down the next dirt road and pull over.
No.
Especially in a state like Nevada, where isn't it? What's the percentage of public land? It's something astronomical.
86% of Nevada is public land.
Wow, that's incredible. So you could literally pretty much go anywhere you want.
With a few restrictions, you can ride wherever you want. You can camp wherever you want. I mean, what a treasure. And so, whenever people ask why I always do my long rides in Nevada, that is why. There is almost infinite amount of land to explore for free. Where else could you ride 1,200 miles on public land? I just, yeah, it's a really special state. But you're right, it can feel daunting for a lot of people who aren't comfortable with that or knowledgeable about Nevada. And so I really wanted this website to be a bridge for those people to help them feel comfortable getting out in and exploring Nevada. There are a lot of trail websites out there, but they're often written from the perspective of hikers or bicyclists. And they mean those user groups don't often need the same type of information that we do as equestrians do. They're not looking at trails the same way. So there's just a lack of equestrian specific information. We have specific requirements that we need to know before we head out on a trail or into a campground. And so that's what I wanted Nevada Horse Trails to be, was sort of written by equestrians, vetted by equestrians, for equestrians.
Fantastic. Well, Thank you so much for putting the time into creating a resource like that for riders.
And it's been fabulous. I've partnered with Horse Trails of America, who is also working on this national sort of directory of campgrounds and trails, but they were really lacking Nevada-specific information, of course. So I partnered with them and our Nevada Department of Outdoor Recreation, who is also building a trail directory, not specifically for equestrians, but now they can use my data and information. So it's all sort of getting out there in a bigger way to help people.
Cool. That's awesome. Do you have some favorite trails that you could recommend to people who are not from the state or who maybe don't get out of their area very often? Like, which ones are the highlights, the prettiest or the most beginner-friendly or user-friendly for somebody who's not so adventurous?
Sure. One of the most surprisingly, my favorite area to ride is Las Vegas. And you think, how could they even trail ride in Las Vegas, around the casinos and the neon lights? But literally less than 20 miles off the strip of Las Vegas is some of the most stunning, beautiful, just jaw-dropping views that you could ever see on horseback. Red Rock Canyon is a national conservation area. It's literally less than 20 miles west of the strip. And you can ride, there are 8 different equestrian trails through there that go through incredible sandstone mountains and forests. And you'll feel like you're 1,000 miles away from Las Vegas. And what a cool experience to get to ride out there. You could bring your own horse and ride any of those trails. There's also an outfitter that does guided rides to Red Rock. I mean, what a way to experience Las Vegas. That is definitely a highlight ride. For me, I ride Red Rock as often as I can. And then on the other side
of I agree with that one. Sorry to cut you off. I absolutely agree. That place is stunning. We have been there numerous times for rock climbing primarily, but I did get to ride a little bit in that area, and it's just spectacular. Everybody should go, even if they do go with an outfitter and just rent a horse for a trail ride.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. It's almost overwhelming. You're like, how can this? You feel like you're riding through a painting of the West. It's just the colors, the scale. What a treasure. And then on the other side of Las Vegas, I think Valley of Fire is also a really standout ride. That is, these incredible rock formations of red and orange sort of glowing sandstone and this really soft red sand. And it feels like you're riding on Mars, but it's stunning and beautiful and harsh. That's a winter ride. You wouldn't want to ride there in the summer, but that's also a standout. And then in northern Nevada, I think any of the trails that get you around Lake Tahoe can't be beat on horseback. Oh my gosh. The mountains, the Sierra Nevada mountains, Lake Tahoe, just stunning, beautiful country. A little more challenging. Some of these trails can be a little more technical, but so worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those, you chose 3 of my favorite areas that I've been to in Nevada. You have all these trails on NevadaHorseTrails.com. And do you also have the camping suggestions or options in those descriptions for these areas?
Absolutely. I'm building that up with a lot of photos. And again, all the information that an equestrian would need before you put your horse in the trailer and you drive 500 miles to Nevada or however long, here's everything you're going to want to know. It's all on the website.
Great. So tell me about your most recent super exciting adventure.
Oh, I was like, which one? I had to think.
What a terrible life you live. You have too many adventures that you can't even figure out which one is which.
I know. It is a tough life. For years, I have been watching other people participate in the annual Pony Express re-ride, which is held every summer. They literally relay the mail in 10 days from St. Joseph, Missouri to Sacramento, California, using a relay of riders riding 24 hours a day, carrying real mail, again, in honor of the original Pony Express. And I've been watching other people do the re-ride every year, and I thought, oh, what an adventure. What an incredible thing to be a part of. You're literally a part of history. And I've ridden many sections of the Pony Express Trail in Nevada on my long rides at a much slower pace. But it worked out this year that I was able to finally participate, and I got to run a leg of the Pony Express carrying mail with one of my horses.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. So which section did you do?
We rode from Dayton, Nevada to Mound House, Nevada. It was about 4.5 miles. Some of the legs can be shorter or longer. It depends on what you're looking for. And it was thrilling. It was so exciting to be a part of. We started in Dayton and there was a crowd of people there to cheer us on and watch. The rider came racing in, galloping down the street. She stopped. She threw the mailbag, you know, off, took it off her horse, threw it on my horse. I hopped on and we were gone. And he raced like the wind. We ran 4.5 miles. I think we finished in just over half an hour. We were flying. Yeah, it was incredible. And then
That's
we got
so cool. You just gave me goosebumps.
Imagine how I was emotional getting to do it. It was, you really feel like you're a part of history. Getting to participate in something like this and seeing the other riders, it's very exciting to see. Even if you don't ride in it, just getting to watch the other riders, it's very emotional. It's a uniquely American Western history story.
Yeah, I imagine the atmosphere must be very electric with anticipation, waiting for the rider to come, and then it's like a whirlwind of activity as you transfer the mail and you take off. And that's so cool.
Emotional. There's just something about seeing this lone rider gallop in, you know, across the desert. I don't know, just it, and you feel it. Everybody's very emotional at all the exchange points, just seeing it. And it's exciting. It's sort of again, it's just such a uniquely American thing, and everyone feels very patriotic in the moment and sort of a part of history.
Yeah. How many participants are there to break up the whole trail?
There are hundreds of riders. Again, the leg can be as short as 1 mile if that's all you're interested in riding or your horse is capable of doing. There are 1 mile legs, there are 10 mile legs, because some parts of the Pony Express Trail are in very remote backcountry places, particularly in Nevada. I think the Pony Express Association would agree that Nevada is the toughest state to cross for the Pony Express. Large sections of it are very remote, and so the riders are doing longer legs just for the logistics. They have to. So there are, in total, to get the mail from Missouri to Sacramento in 10 days, there are often, you know, 600, 700 riders.
Wow. What an endeavor to organize. I can't even imagine. That just sounds really cool. How do people get involved and sign up to participate?
The National Pony Express Association sort of oversees the whole ride. And then each state that the Pony Express Trail goes through has their own chapter. So Nevada has a chapter, Wyoming has a chapter, Utah has a chapter, and those chapters arrange the riders within each state. So anyone who's interested can go to the National Pony Express website, look up their state, sign up to be a rider. It's free. Or look at the schedule and just go out and cheer on other riders.
Wow, that's awesome. And does it always happen at the same time every year?
It's in June every year.
Cool. All right. I might have to go check that out one of these years.
It was. It's a once in a lifetime. Well, it doesn't have to be. I'm already going to sign up for next year, so it's not once in a lifetime. But it really is a special thing to be a part of. You really feel a sense of accomplishment. I can't have the mail be late. I don't want to be the one who makes the mail late because it's such a tight schedule. So I was like, we got to go. We're running. We're, you know, my horse was fabulous. I was like, we can't slow down.
Which horse did you ride for this?
I actually took Fremont, who is my newer Mustang that I adopted. And he's a little, obviously, less experienced than Sage, who I've used for all of my long rides. But I took Fremont because he's a little faster and I was worried. Sage is slow. We would have gotten there, but we would not have been on time. And I thought, I don't want to be the reason the mail is late, so I took Fremont.
That's cute. Mustangs are known for their energy conservation. So
Sage,
that's really
after
neat.
tens of thousands of miles to Nevada, Sage is the master of energy conservation.
I bet. He's like, I don't know how long this lady is going to take me out for. I better slow it down.
Please.
Are there any things that you've learned through your experience long riding that you apply in even your shorter trail rides, or that you think would be good advice for other people who are venturing out, maybe preparedness wise or navigation or anything like that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, and people often will say, oh, you're an over planner, but I really think when you're riding, whether you're riding 5 miles or 500 miles or 5,000 miles, the safety of the animals has to be the priority. In especially, it's 2024, we can't, there's just no excuse for pushing our animals in or putting them into situations that are dangerous when those can be avoided, especially again in 2024. So I am a huge advocate for planning and preparation. The reason I do my long rides every 3 to 5 years is because when I finally decide on a trail, I'll spend a year or more planning and preparing for it. And by that, I mean I am scouting trails maybe in person. I am looking at maps, I'm making sure I have the right gear, I'm testing new gear, I'm adjusting. I'm really do a lot of prep work so that when I am on the trail, I'm safe, my horse is safe, I know generally what to expect from the trail or any situations that might arise. A sort of minimizing risk as best as I can so that we can have a safe, enjoyable journey. And I put that practice again into use even on short day rides. I'm just not willing to risk my horses. And so, I think Nevada can be daunting and the backcountry and any state can be daunting, but people shouldn't let that stop them from going out and having adventures with their horses. Just spend a little time planning and preparing and making sure you're safe.
Do you find that when you go out for a short pleasure ride, you kind of can't help have this habit of over preparing and bringing, everything but the kitchen sink, because you're just so used to riding long distances and being prepared for every scenario?
Yes and no. I do tend to carry stuff that I probably didn't need. But I think when you start long riding, one of the first things you learn is not to pack everything in the kitchen sink. That's a real common problem for long riding, is that people starting out, they bring too much. They want something for every scenario. And so getting your weight down in your pack, especially if you're doing ultra light packing like I do, is so crucial to really bring the essentials and bring weight appropriate gear. And so I'm really a stickler about that anyway. Like I have all ultra light supplies, but I do tend to bring, you never know. I think, what if I'm out and I decide I want to just keep going? I want to be prepared. So I do tend to bring, everybody knows if they ride with me, I probably have the thing we'll need on the trail.
Oh, yeah. So you're that person that everybody else relies on. I'm that way for my husband. He brings nothing. I bring everything double so that he has a jacket or whatever.
Downside of being the most prepared.
Yeah, totally. What do you define as the essentials?
I always carry, even no matter what time of day, I'm always going to bring a flashlight. I'm always going to bring a knife. I'm always bringing extra water. And by that, I mean enough water for me and my dog, but and then some. I don't mind coming back to the trailer with water. I want to make sure I always have enough. But I'm riding in the desert, so it's extra important. Some snacks, and I usually bring, what else is in my grab and go kit? I have a small first aid kit. I have a larger first aid kit for long rides, but I have a small first aid kit that I grab for just day rides, for basic things that might come up. And I have a whistle, which sounds crazy, but it doesn't weigh a lot. So I feel like it's an okay thing to bring. But especially when you're riding in the desert and the distances are vast and it can be hard to be spotted or seen or heard yelling. So I always carry a whistle. And I also always carry an old school compass. I love maps. I carry a GPS often, but you cannot rely on them 100% of the time. And having an old school compass and knowing how to use it can literally save your life.
Yeah, definitely. I really like the whistle. I carry a whistle as well. And with the compass, did you get that navigational experience through your military career, or is that something you learned on your own?
I did. I didn't grow up doing any. I don't come from outdoorsy people. I didn't grow up doing anything outdoorsy. I knew nothing. My first exposure to doing anything outside was during my time in the Army. And we did a lot of land navigation, sort of basics and courses. And I was obsessed. I loved it. I thought it was so fun, so interesting. And I really credit that experience with years later getting into long riding and helping me do it safely and learning how to use a compass. And I'll tell you, on one of my long rides, my second long ride around Nevada, there was a day where I lost my GPS. So I didn't have my maps.
Oh
And
no.
all I have, and I was in mountains that I had never ridden before. I was, for all intents and purposes, lost. And all I had on me was that compass. And that compass is what got me out of the mountains to the next run.
Oof. Well, that's a good skill to have when you're going really far out in the wilderness. What would you say is the most scary slash exciting slash adventurous, in air quotes, story? Like what's the craziest or weirdest or off the wallest thing that's happened to you while you were out on the trails?
Oh my gosh. After three long rides and all the adventures in between, I have thousands of those stories. It could be the rattlesnake that slept under my tent. It could be running into a bull elk on the trail and having my horse try to fight the elk. It could be getting lost on the trail and having to use my compass. It could be a gold mine sprung up and blocked my trail and I had to reroute 3 days. I mean, I've literally had every kind of experience that you can have out there. But I'm fortunate that I haven't had any that were truly dangerous or scary. I think for me, the scariest moments are when the terrain is challenging and I start to worry about my horse. And we have to get through this safely. I need my horse to think about his feet. I need him to make smart choices, make good decisions. And trust me when I ask him to go places that look a little dicey. And also hoping that we can get through certain places. Again, with so much backcountry, you never know what condition the terrain is going to be in. So for me, it's usually the scary moments are terrain challenges or unpredictable weather. Otherwise, it's all goofy stuff that's part of the adventure. They're the fun stories, you know?
Do you think that riding Mustangs is an advantage when you get into those challenging terrain situations?
I'm biased, so yes, I tend to think I do think so. But I'll tell you, when I first started planning my first ride, I at the time was riding a paint horse, a domestic paint horse, and as I started training and preparing for that very first long ride, I was very honest about his capabilities and limitations, and really had to come to terms with the fact that he was not the right horse for long riding. Mentally or physically, I just didn't think she was the right horse. That's a tough decision to have to make as a horse owner, you know, because we all think our horses are perfect, and they are, but the limitations and are there. And so when I realized that and I started thinking, what I have to get in a different horse, a new horse, what should I get? What breed should I look at? And it was like, well, why wouldn't I consider Mustangs? I'm riding in Nevada. They're born on the range in Nevada. And if they've had a few years on the range, they sort of develop range smarts, street smarts, you know, they're already exposed to a lot of the things on the trail that might scare a domestic horse, whether that is antelope, pronghorn antelope, jackrabbits jumping out of the bush, could be elk, crossing creeks and streams, being out in new places. They're sort of already a little mentally mature to handle that kind of environmental, those kinds of environmental challenges. So once I realized that, it was like lightning, you know, like light bulb moment. I just thought a Mustang is, of course, that's what I should. That is how I got into Mustang adoption. I adopted my first Mustang Sage from the prison program in Carson City. And now I'm fully a Mustang advocate.
That's super cool. They seem like such incredible horses. And like you said, if they grow up on the range, they have that early life experience that kind of gives them a complete education that they are entirely responsible for. You know, there's no human intervention teaching them how to walk over logs or navigate unstable terrain. They learn that totally on their own. And I feel like horses that are allowed to have those kinds of experiences, like either domestic horses that are turned out on a 100-acre ranch, or whether it's a Mustang, giving them the freedom to experience and learn the environment on their own and kind of like learn through trial and error, like be allowed to make mistakes, hurt themselves, realize that they can get through scary situations on their own, have another horse with them to guide them through it. I think that's the best education a horse could get. So I personally also believe that Mustangs that are born on the range and get to live there for a while have a distinct advantage. And I would love to get one day. We actually, when we were shopping for my husband's horse, went down to the prison in Florence, Arizona, where they have the prisoners gentle the horses. And we looked at a few there, but unfortunately he's 6'3" and all of the Mustangs there were like 14'2". So
yeah,
that wouldn't work. But
there's a lot of diversity in Mustangs because depending on the breed mixtures, there are, you know, you can, there's so much diversity in their body shape and size and all that, but they're hardy, and they're, for the most part, every horse is different. They're a little more confident and mentally mature. Again, if they've had a little time on the range, I just think you can, once you've started working with them, and you can really see the difference with domestic horses. And I've never looked back. You know, I got Sage in 2011. I adopted him from the prison program in Carson, and again, he's done all three long rides with me and countless rides in between. And now my new Mustang, Fremont, you know, just, I've been very fortunate.
What an incredible partnership. That's super cool. I love it.
I mean, and that's the other thing, long riding, but even all the other rides that I do, what an intimate way, number one, to get to know the land, but also to be with your horse in true partnership. Experiencing challenges together on the trail and having to work together to get through them, to trust each other, to make good decisions. It's just such a special way to be with your horse, to spend time with your horse.
Absolutely. I see that as well in our travels and some of the backcountry pack trips that we do. Just even in my normal life where, you know, right now my horses are snoozing right outside this window when they have 50 acres of land that they could be grazing or roaming around, you know. They're outside hanging out next to us and they come up to my camper screen door and beg for treats every evening and I feed them right through the slot. Like you end up living with your horse in a very close and intimate way that a lot of normal modern horses don't get because they're stabled or boarded at a stable and they only see their humans every few hours or for a few hours every week or something like that. So I think a lot of people completely misunderstand or don't appreciate the level of connection that you can build with a horse just by being out on the trails, living and working with them, riding in partnership. And I think that's so special. And it's really, really fantastic when I meet other people who kind of get that and experience that as well. And I really wish that for a lot of people. I really want to, you know, through this podcast and through my YouTube channel and everything else that I do and through my social media that I share, just like you, you know, we want to try to reach people who don't have the same opportunities or bravery or courage that we have to go out and really adventure and experience the world and hopefully show people that it's possible. It's not as scary as you might think. Just kind of dip your toe and try it out and get out there, and you'll be surprised what you can do, what your horse can do, and how much you're going to enjoy it.
Absolutely. And no one needs to jump into a 1,000-mile ride right off the bat. I didn't do that. No one should do that. But a slow build, learn the skills, become comfortable and confident with your own skills and with your horse, and then you can start to build on that. And that's, again, as you said, for me with the website, Nevada Horse Trails, I hope that people can find those trails and campgrounds to start pushing themselves to getting out there more and more and start building on that. And maybe they never end up doing a, you know, crazy backcountry trip, but it'll give them the tools to test out their comfort zone.
You are such a fantastic and interesting person to talk to. I really appreciate you taking the time to come and chat with me, and I love having you on, and hopefully we can do this more frequently. But I think you need to write a book because you have so many cool stories. So if you don't already have that in your plans, you should do that. And B, I will be following you on all of your social media, as I always do. But please tell my listeners where they can find you.
I am on almost all the social media platforms under Nevada Discovery Ride is my username on most accounts. NevadaHorseTrails.com and NevadaDiscoveryRide.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Have an awesome day. And say hi to Sage and Fremont and Juniper for me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.